Welcome to the Scott Radley Show for this Monday evening. Brand new week. Glad you are along and thrilled you're along. We got a lot of stuff to get to today. We are going to be talking about a proposed high-rise right down on our waterfront. There's a public meeting about this, but we're going to be talking about, is this something that we want or that we need? And those two things can be mutually exclusive. We may want it, but we may not think we need it. We may not want it, but we may think we need it, or either or both. We're going to be talking about that one a little later on. There are strong feelings about this in the city, by the way. We will also be talking about oil prices, mostly because I think if you haven't yet been out to fill up, you might want to brace yourself, take a chair or something while you're filling up, because you may want to sit down. It is stunning out there when you go to fill up your car. And specifically what we're going to talk about is there is a carbon tax addition coming in less than a month now. Is this time for a carbon tax increase? Or is this time for a carbon tax increase because this can help push us off of fossil fuels and this is exactly what we need to move away from gas and oil? We'll talk about that one. Don Robertson will be with us next hour as always. Love having him here. Stick around for that one. If I don't hear you all that well today, it's because we began a home renovation today. Not the whole home, just we're redoing one of our bathrooms. And I got to tell you, trying to work today, it sounded like the house was about to fall in while they were doing the work. So hopefully I'll be able to hear you, but I think I may have some permanent damage to the tympanic membrane. We'll see. Listen, something happened over the weekend that dawned on me, and I wonder if it's happening to you as well. And we're not going to open the lines right now, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can send me an email. I was watching the news. I'm sure you've been watching the news as well about what's been going on in Ukraine. I mean, who hasn't been? If you haven't been keeping up, I don't know what you're doing. This is the story in the world right now. And I caught myself. I caught myself doing something that I realized as I was doing it, I don't know what to make of it. And it was simply this. I have, and I bet lots of you have as well, begun to almost look at this as a competition, as instead of a war. And when you hear the numbers coming in that, well, Ukraine is taking out 10,000 Russian soldiers, Ukraine is taking out 11,000 Russian soldiers, all the rest, you're kind of going, yeah. And then, you know what? I caught myself on the weekend when I saw a report or read a report or something about this, and I thought, is that really the appropriate response? And I'm pretty sure it's not, because, you know, ultimately, those 10,000 people are people. Those 10,000 soldiers are people. And I got thinking about it. I was, yeah, you know what? It's really easy to be rooting for one side, because there is one side that, boy, there's the good and there's the evil here, it sure seems. And you're rooting for the good, right? I think. Unless you're, I don't know why you wouldn't be. I don't know why you'd be rooting for Russia at this point. I don't know why you'd be rooting for the aggressor. But still, I was struck when I sat there, all of a sudden it dawned on me, and I was struck and I thought, is it really the right thing to be rooting in this way, where you see the numbers and you're like thinking, great, like let's take out another thousand, whatever else. Let's really stick it to Putin. Because, you know, the irony of this, do you think that this is affecting Vladimir Putin at all? I mean, not winning, I think he is. I think he's probably humiliated at this point. I think he's probably furious based on what we apparently know about him. But if a Russian soldier gets killed, do you think it really bothers him? I mean, if it did, would he have sent them in the first place, knowing that some people were going to die? I don't know. I say, when I thought about this week, when this was going on, I was thinking, well, good, Putin's losing. I don't know how much Putin is really losing here. I don't know that it's really costing him anything at all, except for maybe a bit of reputation, but that can be, you know, that's what it is. I mean, his reputation is what his reputation is. I don't think it's getting better. I don't think he ever was seen as a guy who we had a lot of gave a lot of reputation to. He was what he was. I mean, it's worse now, I grant you, for sure. But, you know, headline, Putin loses 1,000 troops in a day. And you're like, ho-ho, great, Ukraine's... No, those are people. It's it's dangerous. And I caught myself this weekend. It's dangerous to treat this like it's some sort of sporting event. You know, it's not 10,000 Ukraine, 10,000 Russia, 4,000. Hey, Ukraine is winning. Everybody's losing. It's just really easy to get caught up in the numbers and feel good about it when really there's, I hate to do it, but I mean, I hate to be downer, but there's not much to be feeling good about, is there, with this? Even if the side that you hope wins is winning, still people. There was a downer start, wasn't it? But it was one of those realizations this weekend that it's got to be careful how you think about this. Anyway, we got to take a break. As always, the first segment of the Scott Radley Show is brought to you exclusively by Fox40Shop.com for sport and for safety. It has to be Fox40Shop.com. Enter the promo code Radley at checkout, and you will get 25% off your order. When we come back, we are going to come local and talk about a giant building, condo building down on the waterfront. Do we want this? Is this a good idea? Well, we'll discuss it. Stay with us. Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. Over the last number of years in this city, we have spent a lot of time talking about housing. Affordable housing, price of housing, people moving here for housing, people leaving because they can't afford housing. Housing is an ongoing, never-ending discussion point in this city. It just is. And now we have another discussion about housing that we are diving into, which is a discussion about whether or not we want to have a 45-story condo tower down on our waterfront. There are those who say, yes, we should, because A, we need the units, if you followed the story, and B, you know what? It's a nice place where people would want to buy a place. The people against it would say, but wait a second, we don't want to have a blocked waterfront like Toronto has where you can't see it from anywhere in the city. So what do we do with this? Well, Ward 2 Councillor Jason Farr has put out a thing today saying there's a city meeting, a public meeting tomorrow if you want to have your say in this. It's the latest opportunity for people to say what they want to say about this. I want to bring in Jason Farr. Jason, how are you tonight?
Very good. And for the first time on your show, I'm actually driving while we chat en route to the Garden City for Game 3 of the U18 Huskies first round playoff action, Scott.
Wow. Wow.
And I just gave my son the advice that our good friend Don Robertson has given on your show to my boy and to many others. Don't think too much.
You know, that's a line that a lot of us have lived by, and for better or for worse.
I agree.
But Jason, you know what? We're not thinking too much is certainly not something that's happened around housing in this city. This has been, as I say, a topic of discussion and debate and argument for a long, long, long time. And now we have this one where you're obviously hearing from people. Are you mostly hearing from those saying, I don't want to build this tower? Or are you mostly hearing from people who say, I want this tower?
I knew you were going to ask that, and the honest answer is yes, but I've really only heard from maybe 10 total. So let's say 7 out of 10 are very concerned. The other 3 are very excited. That's just a sample. They'll hear from a whole lot more tonight, and that's really the stage we're at. And ultimately, when all this is through, and all of it mandatory by an LPAT settlement, in a case where some North End residents were challenging the West Harbor plan as it relates to Pier 8 and the Waterfront Shores project, long, long planned for. They said go ahead and look at a tower, but ultimately, and according to that plan, it'll be in council's hand whether or not we want to do it.
This one of the real issues around this, Jason, is that we need housing in the city, and that's been made abundantly clear for a long, long, long time. We need affordable housing as well, but we need housing, period. Now that we have an opportunity for a large building, we have those who say, but I don't like this kind of building. And I'm not criticizing them. That's, you know, what it is. Everyone's got their opinion on this, but how do we get around the fact that if you build it here, people are not going to be happy? If you build it in a neighborhood, people are not going to be happy. If you build it in somewhere else, people are not going to be happy. It seems very difficult to make people happy, and there may be good reasons why they're not, but it seems difficult to find a place that's going to satisfy everyone.
high density, which we're talking about on this parcel, is difficult. Not as difficult, Scott, as it was, let's say, a decade ago. We've since put a secondary plan together, as it happens in the downtown, where about 40% are high density, and very little of that was frowned upon. And people have, you know, taken more of a understanding approach in core areas. Now, the waterfront with this one, I'm not surprised that we're all the planning. And one of the things, even counting before my time, but during it, always said was, this is not a high-density area. We don't want Toronto's waterfront, was often said. And so this one parcel of the nine or so that are being built upon could very well be home to a 45-story tower if council decides, ultimately. And that is straying from a long engaged-upon waterfront plan. Now, here's the thing, though, and to your point real quick, the actual numbers of units in that Pier 8 approved plan now is roughly the same. With this tower, you might get 100 or 150 more, but it's still hovering around the plan for 1,600 units, and there's still 5% of those units affordable. Where I think the appellants on this one, and they've been appellants before in many waterfront plans and other plans, North End Traffic Management Plan and others, Herman Terkster and his folks, very appropriately went through the channels, didn't like council's decision, challenged it in the province. They came up with this so-called settlement as a means to get not so much more affordability, but family size units, bring more families, assuming that the more higher you go, there'll be more family size units, and assuming, and you can't necessarily guarantee that these, you know, 300 or 2,000 square foot units, let's say, will be occupied by families. It might just be one guy that wants three rooms. But regardless of that, that was the settlement. We're supposed to get out there, engage, see if people are okay with what they're calling an iconic building by a North End world, now world-renowned architect that's going to be presenting a concept tonight, where some might change their mind and see the value in it. The only other thing I'll say, Scott, and I mean, this is about public engagement this week, but and everyone from the city should take part if they want to. You know, there's nothing stopping us from, you know, putting some holding provisions on the fact that the one concern I hear more than any of the 10, of the 7 of the 10, is that there's a concern that it'll mean more towers will pop. If you let this one go,
right,
there'll,
right,
there'll be others. Well, you could put a holding provision, since it's one consortia building in that entire area, that they can't go higher on those other. In fact, they're going lower to make the higher parcel potentially happen. So there's things you can do, and they'll probably discuss those elements of provisions that you could you know, put forward as you go forward if this thing gets legs. But it's a tall order, that's for sure, and one that wasn't contemplated until the provincial judge made this call.
Well, and so we only have a few moments left here, but let's say that City Council put a provision in to say this is the only one. You can build this tower, and then we're going to... Why could another City Council down the road in 5 years not reverse that provision and build another tower because they want to? I mean, really, even if you were to put a provision in, it doesn't lock it in place, right?
In this and any other city, it's a really good point, Scott. That can always happen. And it wouldn't even be a City Council. It could be a developer who says, I want to go for a zoning change or an official plan amendment or both. And that stuff happens all the time. And then ultimately, yes, it falls in council's, especially if it's a zoning and an OPA amendment, it will fall in our hands and we would ultimately make the decision. But, you know, that's why you have planning committee, and that's, you know, over time sentiments change. If we would have put that secondary plan I talked about into play in 2009, it probably would have met so much resistance because 40% of it was high rise. Very little resistance 10 years later, though. So appetites change even with the nearby residents.
It is, I'm sure it will be heated. I think, now, you're saying tonight. Is it tonight or is it tomorrow? I thought it was March the
8th. I said tonight. It's March 8th. I appreciate that correction.
That's okay. No. So people can go on to, go look on Jason's Twitter feed, Jason Farr Twitter. You can find the link right there. That's probably the easiest way. You can also go to the City of Hamilton and find the link so that you could go online. It's a webinar, and then there's other meetings if you want to have a say in this one. Jason, thank you for the time today. Appreciate you doing this while you're driving.
All right. Don't think too much, Scott.
Yeah. Never do, as many people would say. No, this is, look, this is a heated one, because there, we do need housing in this city. We do need more units. Is this the one that we like, though? Is this what people want? I think these things would sell fast, right on the water, view out onto the lake. I think they would sell fast as anything. But what happens if then the next person comes along and says, I want to build one? It's a fair question. Again, go to Jason's Twitter feed or go to the City of Hamilton website. It's cityhamilton.ca, and then it's a long thing, but you can find it on there through the city website. Let's take a break. Back after this. Stay with us. Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. I want to talk to you about something that I know that you have probably experienced already, and that is, if you've been out driving and you've had to go to the gas station and fill up your car, you know what's going on out there. You know that we're now looking at $1.75, $1.80. We're hearing about the possibility that we could soon match what's happening in BC already at $2 a liter. $2 a liter. I mean, it's unfathomable. It's never been something we've even contemplated before. And yet, on top of that, in 3 weeks from now, we are going to be having an extra tax, an extra carbon tax put on top of that, just to make it more expensive. And I want to know from you, you've got two options here. If you were the federal government, would you hold off on the carbon tax? Because you know what? People are hurting right now, and it doesn't just affect you filling up your car. Trucks have to fill up to bring food to stores and to bring goods to stores, and those costs go up. Everything goes up when gas prices are like this. Everything. So people are really hurting right now. So we are going to delay the implementation of this latest round of carbon tax. Or you may say, no, this is perfect, because this is going to be the incentive and the motivation for people to get off of fossil fuels. This is exactly what we needed to be the push to get people to move away from big cars, away from gas guzzlers, away from cars altogether, get onto public transit. I want to know from you. Number's 905-645-3221, or you can call in your cell, *9900. Should the government on April 1st be bringing in this carbon tax, the extra carbon tax, or should it wait? Should it bring it in because this is going to help us get away from fossil fuel usage and help the economy? Or should it wait because, you know what? Everybody is struggling right now, and this is not the time to dump an extra expense on people. The numbers again, 905-645-3221 or *9900. Love to hear from you. Well, let me go to Bev before I say about me. Bev, how are you tonight?
I heard you talking about the gas there. And today I was sitting there and I was listening to what out in British Columbia, what they're paying for a liter of gas, which is
$2.
$2.02. And if you can, 1 gallon of gas is $9.09.
Wow.
That's what it figures up to. Well, right here in Caledonia, they're $1.85 right now in Caledonia.
So would you bring in the carbon tax and say this is going to help us get off fuel, or would you say, no, we need a break right now, this is not the time?
I would say that they don't need to do that. You know, like, it's just, like, where is people getting the money from? I mean, like, people are going into gas stations and putting enough gas in their cars just to go to work back to the day. They're not filling up their tanks. A friend of mine works at a gas station. He said people are coming in there and they're only buying enough gas just to get them to work and back in the days. They do it by the day. They're not filling their cars up because they can't afford to.
It's a heck of a point, Bev.
85.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I mean, look, we at the beginning of COVID, I don't know if people remember what gas was at the beginning of this when we were all home. Wasn't it like 60 cents a liter or 70 cents a liter? I mean, it was crazy low.
78,
okay. Bev, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate your call tonight.
I just thought I'd tell you, $9.09 a gallon. And that gallon of gas, it won't take you very far.
It will not. Bev, thank you. 905-645-3221. Or *9900. Is this the opportunity You know, politicians always say, never let a good crisis go to waste. Is this a good opportunity to convince people that it's the time to get off of fossil fuels? This is our moment to be the environmentalists that we say we are. And just out of necessity, people are going to have to stop driving and take public transit and find other things and other ways to heat their house and drive around or get around. Is this that, or is this not that opportunity? Is this, if you're the government, time to show some restraint and say people need to be able to survive and live and pay their bills right now, and this is not a time to hit them with another tax? 905-645-3221 or star 9900. I'll tell you, I am firmly in the camp of don't put the extra tax on right now, and I'll tell you why. We can say that the carbon tax is necessary in the long term, that we have to have short-term pain to achieve long-term results. That would be what some people would say. Yes, it's expensive now. Yes, it's going to hit people hard now. Yes, it's going to hurt people in the wallet right now, but think of the long-term benefits of this. But if we also have to be able to live today, and if we as a country, or if as a government, if our federal government truly believed in the concept of long-term gain for short-term pain, that, you know what, some people are going to have to absorb a little pain right now because it's just the time we're in. Well, then why in the world did we give out CERB checks? Wasn't getting this magnificently enormous debt with all the CERB money we gave out, wasn't that to help people through short-term pain? Because yes, it's going to hurt us in the long term, but you know, we have to look after people today because people have to be able to live today. That to me is very similar. The way gas prices are and the cost that we have and everything else, I don't see how you can possibly then add an extra cost to people, even if you philosophically believe you're doing the right thing, because long term we need to help the economy. I don't know how you can do that and say that we are not all that concerned about people's short-term dealings with their money or their bills or paying for food or anything else. How do you say we had to give people CERB because we couldn't let them suffer in the short term, and then here say, well, we don't mind that your bills are going through the roof, but we don't care about that. We're concerned about long term. It doesn't seem to jive. Brian is with us. Brian, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. Brian, what do you think about this?
Well, didn't you hear today? We're totally self-sustainable with oil.
I did hear that, yes. The Prime Minister said we're self-sustainable. I didn't quite understand, but okay.
I don't think he does either. If we were self-sustainable, we wouldn't be looking at prices the way that they are now. We're self-sustainable. We just don't allow ourselves to get to it. And demand is just completely out of touch. And for them to proceed with this additional carbon tax is ludicrous. He's just totally out of touch. The man needs to have a wake-up call.
But Brian, look, I don't disagree when we say that politicians are out of touch. They have their own driver. They have their own planes. They don't have to pay to fill any of these things up, and so they don't get it. They get their food provided, all this kind of stuff. I get that. At the same time, though, it's not just, to be fair, it's not just the government. There are an awful lot of people who really believe that this is a really good idea because this is the chance to get people off fossil fuels. We've got them now. Let's push them a little further and it'll get them off.
But Scott, I consider myself, I'm not anti-climate change. I am, I've always looked at that. But people have to realize that we can't just fall off of fossil fuels entirely and switch to, standard energy or whatever they call it.
Windmills or, solar, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, well, but you said it before, if Germany can't come up with a process to do this, who can? And what have they done? They've done a total reversal because they went whole hog into anti-fossil fuels. They went wind, they went solar, they scrapped nuclear, they shut down their coal plants, and they all got cold and we're in the dark because it doesn't work. We're not there yet. There's nothing to say that we can't get there, but talk about put the cart before the horse. I mean, even Elon Musk is saying, hey, we need pipelines. Absolutely, because he can't build his cars. You can't build electric cars. You can't make these batteries without fossil fuels. People just have to wake up. Can we get there? Absolutely. Can we do it in a day? Absolutely not.
Brian, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling in tonight. 905-6, well, you know what? We don't have time right now. If you want to say something else, I would love to hear from you. Send me an email, Radley, R-A-D-L-E-Y, Radley at 900CHML.com. Look, I just don't see how this is in any way a helpful thing. You like to believe that your government, that the one thing your government does for you is look out for you, is put a safety net under you. Forget all the peripheral and extraneous things governments do. The one thing I believe that governments exist to do is to provide a safety net. And I don't believe that at this point in time, when we're talking about gas pushing $2 a liter, and we're hearing that that could be the price in Ontario before long, that adding a new layer of tax right now is putting a safety net under. It seems that rather it's putting a pin in your eyeball. It's sticking it to you. And this is, even if you believe entirely in the carbon tax idea, it's about timing. I don't believe this is the time to be doing that. Now, once again, those who believe wholeheartedly in it will argue the whole point of the carbon tax is to make it more expensive so you're less likely to use much fuel. That's the whole idea behind this. And others will say, yeah, but you get the carbon tax back as well. Well, you get some of it back. You get some of it back. But to hit people with this now, to me, just seems like it's the opposite of what a government should be doing. However, we will be talking about it again before then, because there seems to be no evidence that they are considering not putting it on. So, you know, brace yourself. That $2 a liter will be fun. Will be a lot of fun. Let's take a break. Back after this.
History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die.
6:51 on a Monday evening. Time for Matt's story of the day. Matt is sitting in today, holding Ben's spot today. So we're going to bring Matt into the game. I think Matt's done this before, but I'm going to give Matt three stories from around the world, all a little bit unusual. And then Matt, using whatever criteria he decides to employ this evening, I mean, he's new at this, so it could be whatever. Yeah, we don't know. We put no rules.
I looked it up. It was October of last year.
October. So it's been a while. So, yeah. So Matt is, he is a wild card. We have no idea what Matt will choose here. I am going to give Matt these three stories. He decides which one he likes best. Feel free to play along at home. Matt, let's start in the Democratic Republic of Congo for story number one today, where this guy, as happens in all places in the world, this guy met this girl and they were smitten and they fell in love, and he went to meet her family and discovered she was a triplet. She had two other identical sisters. They were identical triplets, I guess, or as identical as you get, to the point where the story says, anyway, he at first could not tell them apart. They were that similar looking. Anyway, the reason we bring this up is because they recently proposed to him, all three. Now, plural marriages are, I guess, recognized in Congo. They came to him and said, this is the deal. You marry all three of us or you don't marry any of us. He now has three wives who are all exactly the same, essentially.
Now, if you said that was the plot of a movie, you would say that's unbelievable.
You would. And some people would say that's fantastic, but I don't know, you know, that's up to each individual person. Or you could say, holy cow, I don't know if I could have three spouses, wife or husband. That sounds like way too much. I mean, go watch Sister Wives if you need to and live vicariously.
Anyway. Well, if you can't tell them apart, could you call them all by the same name? Could that be part of his deal? Because it seems like he should have something to the table here if they're going to be the ones bringing that agreement to the table.
Think of the gags they could play on him or the ways they could trick him. I'm sure by now, if he's married all three, and they do have photos of the wedding, I'm sure that he has by now figured out how they look different, but who knows. Story number two, there is a chain of restaurants in France that specializes in one of Canada's delicacies, poutine. Here's the problem. Not everybody apparently in France understands what poutine is. They haven't all been to Quebec. I guess, you know, it's a very Quebecois thing. It's not a French thing. The Maison de la Poutine has had some problems recently because there are, it seems, a lot of people in France who think poutine and Putin are the same thing. And they are getting besieged with complaints that they are a restaurant celebrating the French leader. I find this incredible to believe that there are people who wouldn't know this, especially since it's spelled entirely differently. But yes, there are many people who are outraged that they are fans, it would seem, to those of the Russian leader. It's now this restaurant, La Maison de Poutine, has had to put out notices and stuff saying, yeah, poutine is not Putin. Not the same thing. One is potato with cheese curds and gravy. One is a crazy whatever. I always thought the French were a reasonably, if not very intelligent people. I'm shocked that there'd be people there who didn't quite get this. But there you go. There's story number
two. Yeah. At what point do you just consider just, is it really worth the headache to have it? The poutine in the name? You could cheapen it.
That's your whole deal.
I know, I mean, but you could cheapen it and just say, I don't know how much they know about Montreal there or, yeah, I don't know. See, that's it. I would change the name. That's me, though.
La Maison de Zelensky. There, and now you got a winner, right? Story number three comes from Asheville, North Carolina, where a woman went to get her license renewed. And she was standing in the line, and I don't know if, I guess they have computer monitors now instead of people. And she got just, you know, poking around and realized, hey, you know, there's, while I'm waiting here, you can get a personalized plate done. And she had a pretty good sense of humor. And so she's poking around trying to find a silly name for her license plate, thought that would be funny. So she ended up ordering a personalized license plate with the word fart. That was her whole license plate, just fart. Well, she got the license plates delivered. Only now, in retrospect, the folks who run the license bureau in North Carolina have said, yeah, you're not allowed to have that. We need those back. Thank you. So she is fighting to keep her plate or her plates. Here's her clever response to this. They told her she had to write a letter explaining what her plate means to her. What kind of essay do you write to say, yeah, I need my fart license plate? Anyway, she came up with one. She decided, she created a group. Remember, she's in Asheville, North Carolina. She created a group online called Friends of Asheville Recreational Trails. It's now an acronym for her made-up hiking group, which she is trying to win them over. It did make me look this up. And in Ontario, any license plate with, and this is a quote, with eliminatory functions, that's what they describe it, is not allowed. So she could not have got that license plate here among thousands of other words that you're not allowed to have in Ontario. But anyway, will your story of the day today be the triplets in Congo who married the one guy because they demanded that would be the case? Will it be the poutine restaurant in France that's having problems because people think it's Putin that they are honoring? Or will it be the woman in North Carolina trying to save her fart personalized license plate?
You know, I gotta go with the triplets, honestly, because that's gotta be unique. Right? That has to be.
You would think, again, unless you got a show on TLC, in which case, you know, it's not that unique, I suppose. But yes, for three, even those, though, I don't think
they're
triplets.
Yeah, that's questionably, those TLC shows, not to be a downer, but they're questionably real. The reliability, not, I don't know.
And they're not triplets, right? The triplets thing throws it takes it to a new level. Give it time. Give it time. TLC, I'm sure, will find triplets who are married to non-triplets or triplets married to triplets. It's coming. Guaranteed it's coming. Anyway, there's your story of the day. Matt's story of the day. Let's take a break for the news. Back with hour number two right after this. Stay with us. Hour number two of the Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. Thanks for being with us. Don Robertson is going to join us in just 1 second. First, your quiz question this evening. What is the fourth letter in the Greek alphabet? Start going through it. See if you know what it is. What is the fourth letter in the Greek alphabet? 905-645-3221 or star 9900. If you know that one, Matt is in today. Give Matt a call. Give him your name. Give him your guess. He'll keep track. And at the end of the show, we'll see who can get that one right. What is the fourth letter in the Greek alphabet? 905-645-3221 or *9900. Let me bring in our regular Monday evening guest, the guy that I hear so many people say, tune in to hear Don. Couldn't care less about you, Radley, but I tune in to hear Don. And you know what? I agree with him. Don Robertson, owner and operator of the Dundas Real McCoys of ComChoice Realty. Still waiting to hear if he was named Dundas Citizen of the Year for 2021 after winning in 2014. That remains an open discussion. But Donald, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
I am doing fine. I am doing well. I'm doing not as well as Troy Aikman, but I'm doing way better than the Maple Leaf goalies. And we'll get into both of those things today. Tell me something. You've been in hockey forever. How does a goalie like Jack Campbell go from stopping everything and being an all-star and being one of the best goalies in the world to being unable to stop anything? How does that happen seemingly overnight?
Well, if I had the answer to that, I likely wouldn't have time to do this show. Who knows?
I can understand a slow, gradual, you know, you're not as hot. But he's gone from one extreme to the absolute other. That's the thing.
Well, he was playing above his head. I mean, he led in save percentage, goals against average, all those categories, led in all of them. And this is the first time he's ever been a number one goaltender. So you can kind of compare that to Rogge Vachon and Ken Dryden, as I go back decades, to say the Montreal Canadiens, Steve Penny, always used to seem to be able to find a goalie that could stand on his head through the entire playoffs for no particular reason, some of which never ended up being great goaltenders. Two of those
great
did,
defense.
And he didn't. But they had great defense. And the Leafs defense is being exposed, and Campbell carried them. And the defense is playing like their defense is, and Campbell isn't. So I don't know. It's a tough one. A lot of that stuff is confidence. And you know what? There's a lot of people that think goalies are crazy. And I forget what position you played in hockey, but I mean, there's a theory behind that. And so much of it is confidence that can't be controlled by any outside influence. And it's bizarre. And, you know, we've seen some great goaltenders where they think they've lost it. They get traded. Look at Freddie Anderson, who the Leafs used to have. You know, he's not good enough to help us in the playoffs. He's one of the top goalers in the National Hockey League now. Look at Carolina. I mean, he's leading a lot of categories in the NHL.
And does that not kind of answer the question I was going to ask you? Like, how much is defense carrying the goalie and how much is goalie carrying the defense? Does that not kind of answer it? Because Freddie Anderson right now is behind a way more structured, way better defense than he ever was in Toronto. And look at his numbers. It kind of suggests put a good defense in front of a guy and almost anybody in the NHL could be really good.
And that's absolutely the way it is. I mean, our goaltender, Mike Mola, is one of the premier goaltenders in our league and has been for a number of years. But when our defense is awful, and it has been once this year, I mean, Mike Mole can't save everything. Like, when our defense is no good, he is not a messiah. He is just a good goaltender. But when our defense plays the way they should play, he is a premier goaltender. So it has a lot to do with it. And a lot of defense, quite frankly, has an awful lot to do with your forwards coming back and putting back pressure on the forward on their forwards. So if, you know, the Leafs are little, they want to score five or six every night. And when they were playing about 2 months ago, real strong defense, and Keep was saying, you know, this is the way we want to play. Well, the forwards have got away from that. So the defense have to do more, and Campbell's asked to do the impossible. The problem is that what's happening is when your defense softens up, and then Campbell lets the odd leaky one in, and so now all of a sudden everybody says they can't stop a beach ball. So none of those are true. They all get thrown into the pot of soup to see what you can do with it. And he, as you know, as a former goaler, you know that you're the last line of defense.
Yeah, no, my dad used to say that it was unfair that when anybody else on the ice makes a mistake, they just have to skate back and try and recover. But when a goalie makes a mistake, they stop the game and a red light goes on and the referee points at them. And, you know, it's true. It's true. But, you know, the other thing that was always that has always struck me about goalies at any level of hockey, when your goalie is playing great, your team plays different in front of you because now they believe they can take some chances. And so they often score more goals because they're not having to come back quite as hard because they're willing to be a little looser because the goalie is great. Like it affects, it's not just keeping the puck out of the net, though. That's the number one criteria. It changes everything in your team's game when your goalie is great.
It does. And here's how teams win Stanley Cup champions with great goaltending. And or mediocre goaltending. The Detroit Red Wings won a couple Stanley Cups without having the best goalie in the league or even close to it. So because they had, and I forget the kid's name, they had, you know, what you would consider as mediocre goaltending.
But Chris Osgood.
Good goaltending, yes. So the teams with good goaltending are capable of shutting everything else down. Then the goaltending becomes spectacular. Right, because the chances he's working with are so limited, and the scoring opportunities and the different things he faces are more manageable for a goaltender. And when that's gone and he's hung out to dry, boy, it's hard. So the good teams can shut it right down in the playoffs, and that's been a challenge for the Leafs the last 2 years, and it doesn't seem they're any more prepared for it right now than they were last year when the playoffs started. Now, we have seen signs that they can do that. And if they do that again, Campbell will become a better goaltender.
Yeah, it's, you know, the debate now is, do you go try and get a goalie or do you get defense? And I just, a defense, and I look at it and I just think, look at Freddie Anderson, you mentioned him, is the perfect example of a guy when you put now a, suddenly a really structured, really good defense in front of him, look at how much better he suddenly is. And, you know, and you could get 1970s Bernie Perrant, who was my all-time favorite. You could get Bernie Perrant at his prime to come in. And if you don't have a defense around you, he's going to be struggling. There's just no way you can do it all yourself all the time.
The last two or three games, there are people that think that Bernie Perrant can still play better than the Leafs goaltending.
Well, that may still be true.
And he's 70.
At least.
But yeah, yes, at least 70. But there are other challenges, but if I'm Kyle Dubas, who assuredly will run out of rope if they don't win a round in the playoffs this year, I mean, some teams have to win a Stanley Cup. The Leafs have to at least win a round. And if I thought my job was on the line, when I'm Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, I would trade for Marc-Andre Fleury right now. And if it cost me Nick Robertson and two other guys, it might be the only way I can save my job. So, they've got to quit worrying about building for the future. They have to win now.
Yeah, I don't even, I have not allowed the discussion to happen yet about, because it's too far ahead, but I know a lot of other people are, is like, could you imagine, can you imagine if they don't win a playoff series this year? I mean, it's with the guys that you have and everything else. Now, I understand the Leafs have a bit of terrible luck that they're in the division they're in that has Tampa and has Florida and has Boston. I mean, there's no other division like it in hockey. The Metropolitan Division is pretty good, but not as good as this. I mean, it's unlucky that they're going to have to deal with that. But, you know, you have to deal with that. And I know that it would suck if they run into Tampa in the first round and you've got the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs that you have to beat. But you got to beat good teams to win a cup. And if you can't beat them once, ever, you know,
if they can't beat Tampa, they can't win a Stanley Cup. The only thing that's bad is that they would be playing them in the first round.
Right.
What's the difference if it's the conference finals or the first round? You have to be able to beat the best team. And if you can't do it, if you can't beat the best team, you're not going to win Stanley Cup. Every once in a while, the best team gets knocked out early. Nobody ever understands why. Like Tampa did. Didn't Tampa get knocked out in the first round, I believe, after they won the Stanley Cup? And then they bounced back. It was a fluke. They didn't panic. They didn't didn't change their team. They didn't fire their coach. They didn't do a lot of things. It was just That can happen, but that team didn't want to win a Stanley Cup. But if you want to win one, you got to go through all the good teams.
Yeah, the one thing you hope is that you don't get the team in the first round, and as they go through the playoffs, that, you know, maybe they get a few injuries or they get worn out or whatever else, that the first round is a disadvantage to play the best team when they presumably are healthy and at their best. But you know what? It's you're right. It's you got to beat good teams to move on. It's just the discussion around the water cooler, whatever that is these days, on Twitter or on social media, the discussion if the Leafs don't win a playoff series, and we're way ahead of that, but it will be at this point, Don, I think it would be, I honestly believe, and I'm not overstating, I think it would be unlike anything we've seen before. The level of outrage would be at Mach level 12. I mean, this would be DEFCON 6.
Yes, there will be a lot. And heads have to roll.
They would. I mean, they would.
You can't stay the course with this kind of money being spent and this kind of and you can't even blame the coach because they're out of those reasons. I mean, they got rid of, and they're still paying the highest paid coach in the NHL to do nothing. And this is Dubas's guy. I mean, the whole thing is, it'll be, you're right, it'll be something we have never witnessed before.
Speaking of
which is why Dubas has to, if he, whatever he has to pay for Marc-Andre Fleury, he better do it.
Speaking of paying big money for someone, let's take a break and come back and talk about someone who's going to make a lot of money. And I can't tell you, Don, exactly why that is. Well, we'll pick that up when we come back. Stay with us. Scott Radley Show. Quiz question this evening. What is the fourth letter in the Greek alphabet? 905-645-3221 or *990. Don Robertson joins us tonight, as he does on Monday evenings every week. And Don, we're learning, so last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember when it was, Tony Romo, the broadcaster, got an insane deal to call football games where he was being paid essentially $1 million a game as a broadcaster. Well, that of course has now set the bar. Anybody who's a big time broadcaster wants that deal. And it now looks like Troy Aikman is going to move from Fox to ESPN and essentially get that deal. Basically $1 million for every game that he calls from the broadcast booth. What am I missing here? Has there ever been a game that you have watched, whether it's hockey, baseball, football, I don't care what, has there ever been a game where you watched that you really wanted to see that game, but said, you know what, the broadcaster that I really like isn't doing this one, so I can't watch this anymore?
Absolutely never. I can tell you that broadcasters can make a bad game more entertaining.
Yes.
Or good, right? And good broadcasters can make great games more entertaining. John Madden was a great storyteller.
Yes. Bad broadcasters can make it annoying, for sure, unquestionably.
Yeah.
But is it $1 million worth a game? Like, will you be likely, if it's a game that you like or don't like, are you more likely to tune in because Troy Aikman or Tony Romo is talking during that game?
Absolutely nothing to do with what I'd watch. Nothing.
No, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get why the networks would invest this kind of money. And look, we're talking on the radio. We're doing this. I certainly don't get $1 million per show, let me tell you, just in case anybody was wondering that. But you know what? If you're Troy Aikman and you don't want to be paid, you don't think you're being paid sufficiently, you know what? Don't do the games. I just don't get where the value for $1 million a game is.
But Troy Aikman, if he can get $1 million a game, that's his job. And we talk about this a lot when it comes to things like, it comes down to the money.
I'm not critical of him.
But the broadcasters, they're not paying him $1 million because they think it's a bad investment. They must think that if they have Troy Aikman, they can get more money for their advertising and it's going to be a better broadcast. Only if it's marginally better, then they can get marginally more than what they're getting. They probably have to pay. Well, here's the interesting thing. What do they pay what some would consider a poor broadcaster? $400,000 a year? 500
maybe, sure.
A game.
Sure.
Like I don't know what the bad guys are getting. They're probably getting too much too. I mean, you start looking, if we want to analyze it, take a look at what the worst NFL player that played 4 minutes last year, and you say, that guy made $1.3 million to do that? You do it by the minute, he's the highest paid guy in the league.
But
you know, they're bad guys.
But you could replace, Don, those guys, theoretically anyway, are the very best where there is nobody else who can step in and do what they're doing. I don't know if that's exactly true. But, and you're right. I mean, the networks obviously have done some cost-benefit analysis to this. I just can't see where that, and I'm not slagging broadcasters, believe me. There are, as you say, there are great ones out there. But I look at this and I go, I can't see there for me. Maybe people listening are different. For me, there has never been a game that I have ever decided to watch because of who's calling it. Never. Not once.
No,
not once.
No, but maybe there's something we're missing, Scott. I mean, if I'm in the car and I want to listen to the Leaf game, I'll have to say Jim Ralph's a friend of mine. But Jim Ralph can make a 6-1 game a lot of fun to listen to because he's very entertaining. So if the broadcasters say if the game isn't that good, but the color commentator is going to make people stay,
all right,
they can get viewers to stay longer because it's more entertaining. Maybe that's where some of his value is. I mean, I haven't got a clue where they come up with the dollars and cents, but it's 2022. Everybody's getting paid too much money except real estate people and spectator columnists.
Yeah. Well, but do you remember probably, how long ago was it? 10 years ago? Maybe longer than that now. 15 years ago, when it would be like closer to 15, when Dennis Miller did Monday Night Football. With that very thing that you just described, if the game is horrible, at least we have somebody who can make you laugh and make you stick around because it's going to be some comedy and it's going to be entertaining. And that didn't work. He didn't last. Now, he may have been the wrong guy for that. Maybe you needed someone who was just more silly and slapstick. I don't know. But like the idea that we can find someone to fill air if things go sideways, I don't know that, like Troy Aikman, Tony Romo, or those guys who make you stick around because the game is 40-10 at the beginning of the third quarter, you're going to say, I got to hear what Tony Romo says about this midway through the fourth quarter. I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I'll hearken back to Howard Cosell, who never played the game and was not that insightful about football, but he sure brought an awful lot to Monday Night Football when he was there, him and Dandy Don, and you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
That was pure entertainment, and maybe this is part of the package that they're trying to come back with. So these guys aren't comedians. They're not as well-read. They're not as smart as Howard Cosell was, but maybe that's what they're going back to, and it might have something to do with hanging on to viewers longer.
Well, and one more thing about Howard Cosell, he was controversial. You listened, and you either agreed with him or you hated what he had to say. Romo and Aikman and these guys, they're not controversial. They say nothing controversial, barely say anything controversial if they do. Again, it's to me, I look at this and I just think, wow. I mean, if this is how much money is flying around in the broadcast world, that you can pay a guy $1 million a game, $1 million a game. And even if he mails it in, he gets $1 million a game. Maybe all the money in sports is just too much. Maybe that's the bottom line here.
I'm not sure of this, but I'm probably right. Neither one of them ever made $1 million a game playing football. They're going to make 18. They'll make $20 million this year.
Not Aikman, but Romo was around a little later. Romo might have made $20 million as a quarterback of the Cowboys, but probably
there's a lot less chance he's going to get hurt in the broadcast booth than he was having guys run around trying to take his melon off.
No kidding. Anyway, that one stunned me. Anyway, let's take a break. Back after this with more with Don Robertson. Stay with us. Scott Radley Show. Don Robertson joining me as he does every Monday. And Don, really interesting story the other day that it's about Marie-Philippe Poulin, who I think everybody knows is the star player on Canada's women's national hockey team has been for the last three Olympics. I believe she now has three golden goals, which is pretty cool, and don't think anyone else has that. In fact, I know nobody else does. And the story is that when she got back from Beijing, the ECHL team, the Montreal Canadiens ECHL team, so there's the NHL, then the AHL, then the ECHL, it's a lower rung or mid-rung minor league team, offered her a contract to come and play with men, and she turned it down. And her explanation was, one woman playing in a men's league doesn't do anything for the growth of women's hockey. We need a league. And so, you know, I applaud that position that she's taken for the reason that she's taken it. She wants to help build women's hockey, and I applaud that. Good for her for doing that. But there are those who say, you know what, this is a missed opportunity because Marie-Philippe Poulin is so good that she would have gone there and then quickly moved her way up to the AHL. And some have said she would have even maybe had a chance to get to the NHL. Is it me, or is that just people saying stuff that they don't know anything about? Because I truly, it's not an insult against Marie-Philippe Poulin. I don't see a woman playing in the AHL or NHL anytime soon. Maybe as a goalie, but not as a skater.
Wow. I'm not always careful what I say, but whoever thinks that, I don't think understands the game as well as people understand the game. That sounds like Yogi Berra. But Haley Wickenheiser, I believe it was her that played.
Yep, went to Finland.
In the third division in Finland. And the third division in Finland might be as good as the Allan Cup Hockey League. Might be. The third division in Germany absolutely is not. We've had players that were third and fourth line guys with us that have gone over there because they wanted to go to Europe and play a bit of hockey. And they go over there and they could light that Division III up. So if Haley Wickenheiser in her day was playing, you know, and good for her, she played pro hockey. Well, that's Division III in Sweden, and that is not the ECHL. So that's the most cautious measuring stick I can use. Men and women are different. The way they play the game is somewhat different, but it becomes a strength factor. And ECHL have defensemen that are 6'4", 6'5". 6 foot, strong as a bull. It's a whole different kettle of fish. Men's and women's game is different. The women's game has a place. It may well have a place for a professional league. We've talked about it before. If you put them in the right buildings, put them in the Mountain Arena, don't put them in Cobbs Coliseum, let the game grow a little bit, you know, let them work on their crowd and their fan base and everything else and keep the game competitive. That doesn't mean the elite players and women's hockey can play at the AA pro level. And that's what the ECHL is. The American League would be considered AAA. The ECHL would be AA, and everybody else would be single A underneath them. And there's no shame in any of that. But it's a whole different kettle of fish when you're going to have anybody jump to that level and play against that strength and that caliber of players. So I think she made a wonderful decision. Because you don't want to compare men and women at hockey and or possibly football, for sure football. You're right, unless it's in the goal.
I don't know. I don't understand, honestly, Don, why the fascination that we keep trying to find these opportunities to have a woman play in a men's league. We've tried it in various places, and it's generally, I can't think of an example where it's worked. I mean, we have mixed curling now, but really, I mean, we don't have, and there's a reason, and it doesn't, somehow we seem to think that it diminishes women's sports if we say women should play women's sports and men should play men's sports. And I'm not sure that it diminishes it. I think what would diminish it more is if Marie-Philippe Poulin went to the ECHL and turned out that she was a complete non-factor. I think that would diminish women's sports then, because then you go, the best player in the world isn't starring at this level. I think that's a much bigger problem. And I there's no problem with women's hockey. Women's hockey is different from men's hockey, but it doesn't make it bad. It doesn't make it not worth watching. It's just, it's different. It's it's not apples and apples. And I don't know why we continue to try to prove something by saying, well, if she went there, she'd eventually go to the NHL. No, she wouldn't. She just wouldn't. That's not reality.
I didn't want to walk that close to the water in case I drowned. But when I said she made a good decision, that's exactly why she made a good decision. I don't think anything good can come of it. I mean, unless, and whoever said maybe she could go to the American League, I want to talk to that person. I mean, that'd be an interesting conversation for about 38 seconds. She's not going on to the American Hockey League. And what good can come if she doesn't excel at the ECHL level, then it would probably be considered as a failure. And the odds of her excelling at the ECHL level are not good, probably minimal. You've watched some of my hockey escapades over a few decades, and I'm not scared to jump outside the box. We signed Rick Five to play for the Dundas Real McCoys, you know, three-time 50-goal scorer of the Leafs. All ask, all trying to do interesting things. If I think they can bring some credibility to our brand, and do you think that I haven't contemplated seeing if there's an athlete that's played on the women's Olympic team to come and play with us? And I couldn't see any upside for them or us. I mean, I won't even tell you what I'm thinking because I have a lot of respect, and it would be unfair to her to mention her name. But I mean, it's crossed my mind, and I, you know, we have full body contact. And if you put one of those Olympians in the ECHL or even in our league with full body contact, and a lot of the players perhaps would have some respect and wouldn't run her. But if it was, you know, if they put themselves in a bad position and got run over, who wins that?
I don't think that they couldn't handle that. I think they haven't played that game before. So it's an adjustment that isn't there. But Donna, this is not an insult to women's hockey. Women's hockey, people watch it in the Olympics. They had 2.7, I think it was, million people watch the gold medal game in the middle of the night. It was a tremendous, or maybe higher than that. I can't remember if that was the number I saw. It was a tremendous response. People enjoy watching it. They need to get a pro league. But it hasn't worked when you've had women in various sports cross over. I know that there was outrage when they had a mixed martial arts match with a woman fighting against a man. And it was a bad idea. It's not, to me, it's not, the problem is it's not necessary. I don't think you need to have women playing against men to validate women as athletes. I think the best women competing against the best women are every bit as good athletically as the best men competing against the best men, because biologically there are some differences there. And so I don't know that you have to say, well, women's sports isn't up to snuff because they can't run as fast in the Olympics as Usain Bolt. Fine. Nobody can run as fast as Usain Bolt. What's the argument? I mean, it's women competing against women is still in tennis, in golf. Pick your sport. It doesn't matter. It still can be great. I don't understand the reason that some people believe that it only will be respectable somehow, or only be okay, or only be good if suddenly a woman goes in and beats the man. I don't see that is the barometer or the bar we have to establish.
Well, I think that to me, that's a load of crap. It's a different game. It's an entertaining game. It's a wonderful game. And the Olympics are wonderful. The World Championships are wonderful. Let's leave it at that it's just a little bit different. The CFL is a great football league. The NFL is a great football league. They're different kind of leagues, but they're both good in their own right. And we should leave it at that. There should be no bar that any of the women player have to attain themselves or achieve in a men's pro league to gain credibility, in my mind. I mean, that's silly. I mean, I don't see the upside for her. She made a decision.
Go back to Marie-Philippe Poulin for a second here. Is she less of a star? Is she less of a legend in hockey if she doesn't go and play in a men's league? Is she less of a legend if you base her career on what she's done in the games that she's played? I would say absolutely not. Absolutely not. She, gold medal winning goals.
Well, that's Paul Henderson like. And he's a legend, did it in 72. I mean, she can retire now and be considered one of the best to ever play the game. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
I mean, if there are those who truly believe that you can't be considered great until you've played against men if you're a woman, by that barometer, we should have no women in the Hockey Hall of Fame right now. By that, if that's the bar that says you can't be considered great unless you've played in a top men's league, well, then nobody, no woman should be in there. We do have women, and with good reason, because they have been great in their games, in their competitions, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't think that Haley Wickenheiser is somehow less of a player because she was the dominant player in women's hockey because she was a woman. She is a woman. I don't think that takes away from what she does. And I just, as I say, I know that this is going to go on forever. We're always going to have people saying, well, she in whatever sport should go and play against the guys. And maybe someone will come along someday who can do it. But I just don't think that if you don't have that, I don't think it diminishes them as an athlete.
She sure doesn't have to prove herself to a guy like me, I'll tell you that. I mean, she's one of the elite in the world, and let's leave it at that. She doesn't have to do one more thing, in my mind, to be one of the best women hockey player of all time. I'll tell you somebody that played a period in the NHL is Manon Raymond.
Manon Raymond. Yeah.
I don't think she's in the Hall of Fame.
Well, no, and that's, you know, we can go down a whole other thing here. I mean, that was a team at that time that was desperate for some attention, and Phil Esposito did something to create a bit of a circus. I don't think Manon Raymond was really of the level to play at that level. I mean, the women today are way better equipped than Manon Raymond ever was. But nonetheless, that's her. She's got that on her resume, and good for her. Anyway. It's an interesting discussion. The writer who said that, well, maybe she would have gone to the NHL. I think, let's celebrate what she's done.
Who's the writer?
Well, I don't want to embarrass the person, but you can find it on Post Media if you want, but I'm not going to embarrass the person, but no, I think it takes away from what she has done. And I don't think there's any reason that we need to. I think what she's done is spectacular, and we don't expect,
I agree.
You know, we don't expect we don't expect people to compete at levels that they are not ready to compete at. And I just don't think it's a fair thing to say, well, she's got to do this or else somehow she's not really that. No, she's great. She's a great athlete, period. Anyway, Don, we have to run. Thank you very much for the time as always today. Appreciate it.
All right, Scott. I enjoyed it again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. Delta would be your fourth letter in the Greek alphabet. Matt, anyone know that one tonight?
You know what? We had a perfect score tonight.
Really? Nobody?
Not a single one. No, everybody got it.
Oh, okay. Do we have some names?
I do have some names, and I hope I don't mess any of these up. We've got Tom, Christos, Angelo, Russell, Joe, Wayne, Hugh, Danny from Hamilton. We've got the team nicknamed Wimpy, Arnie, Zan, and last but not least, Terry.
Way to go. You had me going there for a second. Yeah, that's and Christos. I mean, good thing that Christos, that sounds like a Greek name. Good
it
thing
does.
Christos got it. Way to go, folks. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at 6 tomorrow. Have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.